WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Market uncertainty once again. The Dow dropping 500 points at the opening bell as investors weigh the consequences of the Trump tariffs. And as the president admits, the U.S. is in a transition period as the effect of those tariffs takes hold. House Speaker Mike Johnson trying to get a budget passed by Friday to avoid a partial government shutdown. He will need every Republican vote because the Democrats are not on board, says ABC's Jay O'Brien on Capitol Hill.
House Democrats have said that they are going to vote no. They've advised their members to vote no. They say that this government funding package doesn't do anything to protect entitlement programs, specifically Medicaid, which they say is on the hook for serious cuts in this Trump administration and in this new House Republican budget blueprint.
House Republicans can pass this on their own, but they would need at least some Democratic support in the Senate for it to advance. An oil tanker has collided with a cargo ship off the eastern coast of England. Lifeboats and rescue helicopters on the scene. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Division of Motor Vehicles, explains its new verification process and alert tool to help consumers protect their identities. Wisconsin DMV recently implemented a new automated identity verification process to help protect customers from potential fraud. The new safety feature is available on several DMV applications. It compares a person's selfie photo taken in the moment with their photo on file with the DMV as a method to verify the customer's identity. When a customer wants to order a replacement driver license or ID card, for example, the customer opens the DMV application on a device that has a camera and then takes a selfie photo. If the image matches the customer's photo on file with the DMV, the customer can continue with the application. A non-match will prevent the individual from using the online application. Consumers can also get account activity alerts and receive confirmation of transactions taking place on their DMV account when they sign up for DMV's eNotify at wisconsindmv.gov/enotify. This can help avoid fraudulent activities, such as an unwanted change of address or someone else ordering a replacement driver license or ID. Besides the alerts, eNotify also provides customers with renewal reminders for their plate, driver license, or ID. If the renewal notification seems off cycle, a customer can visit wisconsindmv.gov and confirm. More than 1 million Wisconsin residents have enrolled in eNotify. The Boaz Village Board will meet Tuesday night at 6 at the Boaz Community Building. The agenda can be accessed at boazwi.gov/meetings. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Bucks lose to the Cavaliers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Cavaliers beat the Bucks 112-100 at Fiserv Forum. Cleveland has now won 14 games in a row. How did Milwaukee measure up? Doc Rivers.
Honestly, I look at the game, guys, and they scored a bunch down the stretch, but defensively, we were good enough to win the game. Offensively, we were not good enough to win the game. We didn't do anything else enough to win the game tonight.
College basketball, the Badgers learn they'll face either Minnesota or Northwestern in the Big Ten tournament Thursday afternoon in Indianapolis. The Badgers upset by Penn State over the weekend. It's Marquette against Xavier at Madison Square Garden on Thursday in the Big East tournament. And the Badgers women's basketball team head coach, Marissa Mosley, has stepped down after four losing seasons in Madison. NFL, Davante Adams headed to the L.A. Rams. The 32-year-old receiver will sign a two-year deal worth nearly $46 million. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Sunny, warm, and breezy today. We'll get to the upper 60s, even lower 70s. And be careful with fire. There will be elevated grassland fire danger today. Tonight, breezy into the 20s. Tomorrow, sunny, cooler, low to mid 40s. We'll be back in the 60s, even close to 70. Later this week. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 29.
Matt Nair on air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong, just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
How are the Trump policies going to affect agriculture? We'll find out with Zaltiel Torres-Small, who was the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture in the Biden administration.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. And as promised, I'm joined by Dr. Anthony Eastreet. And, you know, Dr. Eastreet, if I tried to talk about all the accolades and all the accomplishments that you have in your lifetime, we wouldn't have time to have this conversation. So, first off, you represent social workers. Let's talk a little bit about what a social worker is.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Earl. Yes, I am the CEO of the National Association of Social Workers, and we are the largest professional membership organization for social workers in the U.S., and predominantly in the world. And so when we talk about social work, we talk about individuals that are trained and degree through a Council of Social Work Education accredited program. So they have the skills, knowledge, and ability to work with individuals, families, and communities, but also organizations and policy, right? And so we cover that whole spectrum from, you know, birth all the way to death, and individuals are come to see us. They are going to experience assessments. They're going to experience interventions, treatment plannings. Some of that also includes policy work and understand how policies impact individuals and families, but also making sure that we take the voices of individuals and families to make sure that we're advocating for sensible policies that not only benefit or take into account those that are most vulnerable, but also social workers that work with these individuals. And so, you know, again, a social worker covers a wide range of services. We are the largest provider of behavioral services in the U.S., but we also have our humble beginnings working in the child welfare system, where we still are doing a lot of great work, but we're also in technology, banking, finance. We're helping artificial intelligence feel and become more humanized. And so social workers are everywhere.
Are you facing a shortage of social workers? Are we facing a shortage of social workers?
So that's an interesting question, right? According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we are one of the fastest growing professions out there, but that is only half of that story. I think the other half of that story is that we're seeing social workers leaving the profession because of burnout, because of low wages, because of lack of support from, you know, our state and federal governments to make sure that we can do the work that we do and still be sustainable in the lifestyle that we want. And so what I mean by that is, you know, how do we work with social workers to reduce the caseload? How do we work with social workers to improve working conditions so that when they go on vacation, they can actually relax and go on vacation? And so, you know, while we are a fast-growing profession, I don't want us to lose sight on the fact that many social workers are leaving the field or transitioning to different areas where the salary is comparable to the work that we're doing, but also there's a decrease in burnout in those areas, right? And so it's a double-sided question where, yes, we are growing, but also people are leaving because of the lack of support that we're receiving from funding, whether it's through insurance or through sensible policies that help to impact the individuals, families, and communities that we serve.
If you're just joining us, I'm joined by Dr. Anthony Eastreet. He is the CEO, basically, of social workers. And so let me ask you, I spent a lot of time in the public school system in watching some social workers dealing with what Dr. Eastreet is just some deplorable situations that did not exist for social workers when I was a young man. As I told you, I'm 70 years old, and some of the things that are happening today, homelessness amongst families, mothers moving their children weekly, sometimes daily, possessions in black garbage bags from place to place, children hungry, families hungry, not having any clothing. I mean, these are things, behavioral issues, lead poisoning of children because of the places where they live and stay. Children who live in places like the state of Wisconsin where I live, and who don't have coats and don't have gloves. And, you know, it's a horrific reality for the wealthiest nation on earth, sir. It's a lot more difficult to be a social worker today than it was 40 years ago. Is it safe to say that?
I think the profession of social work has certainly evolved, right? And I think that everything that you're saying is where social workers are, right? You know, we help individuals, families, and communities find the resources that they need so that they can live the best version of the life that they want to live, right? And so we address unhoused, we address people that are unhoused, we address mental health, substance use, we address child welfare issues. And again, you know, I really want to say that social workers are, in fact, the heartbeat of our communities. You know, every day we encounter people in different various stages of life, whether it is, you know, at their lowest point or they may be in acute crisis or they're trying to prevent a crisis. They're going to come across a social worker that is able to help them, right? And I think the one thing that is always important is, you know, social workers are always on the front line. We are literally helping to maintain that social safety net that we see and that we've benefited from for many decades. The challenge becomes that, you know, while we care, not we, while society in itself cares and they understand the issues, you know, that compassion alone is not enough. We need to make sure that people are engaging in that compassion plus action, right? That care that you see for that person that is unhoused, that care that you see for somebody that is impacted by mental health or substance use, how are you turning that into action? How are you helping to help society become better, right? And so social workers, we are experts in building community. We are experts in helping people to find their core group of people, right? But we're also experts in helping people to reduce the impact of mental health and behavioral health, helping people to find resources when they are dealing with being unhoused or housing instability. We are also involved in people when they come in contact with us on their worst days, when there may be some child welfare or child abuse issues. We're there as well, trying to make sure that those families get the resources that they need so they can be reunified or so that they can continue to engage in seeking the help that will get them to the next phase of their life.
You know, Dr. Eastreet, we don't see social workers. So therefore, since they're unseen, you know, it's hard for people to really comprehend and understand the work that they do. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, to what you're saying, I think people see social workers, but I also think that social work has been impacted by a bad brand, right? And so when we see the portrayal of social workers, it's typically in the child welfare system. It's typically we are portrayed as being overworked, ran down, and highly stressed, right? While some of that is true, I think the other part of it too is that social workers are everywhere. We are in certainly child welfare, but we're also in mental health, behavioral health, banking, entertainment, and technology. In fact, I was at an event this weekend where social workers are working with the entertainment industries, where they're working with actors behind the scenes to ensure that while they're putting on the great movies that they're doing for all of us to watch and enjoy, that they're also maintaining their mental health and wellness behind the scenes to be able to continue that kind of work. And so while, yes, in some ways we're unseen, I think it's because people have they have a vision of what a social worker looks like, and we've certainly outgrown that vision. And so when I say social workers are everywhere, more people than not are probably coming into contact with a social worker, and they just don't realize it. And so some of that is understanding that the social work brand has changed in terms of we are everywhere. But the other part of it, too, is if you've not experienced a social worker in your lifetime, I can almost guarantee 9 out of 10 times that you will come across a social worker at some point in time in your life.
So you chose social work as a vocation. Why?
That's a great question, and I get asked that a lot, right? But the reality is that I've always had a connection to behavioral health and ensuring that people can show up as their best selves, right? The other part of it, too, is it really does matter, like, who you come in contact with. My mentor was a Black male social worker. And when I was an undergrad at Bowie State University, an HBCU, my undergrad degree was in psychology. But then I came across my mentor, Mike Green, who told me about social work, who guided me through social work, who helped me understand social work. And as a result of that, I became a social worker. And now I make it a point to, you know, when I go out and talk to people, I help them to understand the scope of social work. But I also offer to mentor them in this space, because the reality of the situation is social work is one of the best professions that I could have ever chosen. I am a proud social worker. I love the work that I do. At the same time, understanding that we have a need for more social workers to be able to do this work. It is sometimes considered selfless work, but at the same time, it is very rewarding work. I just wish that at the same time, when we as we are thinking of it as rewarding work, that we're also compensated at a higher rate, that insurance companies are not constantly creating more and more barriers so that social workers leave the managed care space.
You know, when you look at where we are today with the administration that's in office now, and clearly safety net programs are being eliminated, cut back, the impact that that's going to have on families that need social workers, and social workers who are scouring, the heavens to find support for families at a time when those things are being cut back, the impact that must have on a social worker must be tremendous.
Yes, and so
how do they separate that and keep that? You know, there when you're watching this, it's hard for me to imagine that you know they can hang on. Can you hang on a second, Dr. Eastreet?
Yes.
All right. 855-752-40.
News from the center. WRCE.
Donald Trump is out of control. Stopping payments for health care and food for hungry kids. Eliminating the Department of Education. And letting unelected billionaire Elon Musk fire anyone he wants and get access to your most private information. We need a Supreme Court justice who will keep them in check before they go too far. That's Judge Susan Crawford.
I'm Judge Susan Crawford. As a former prosecutor and now as a judge, I believe in protecting you, your family, and your right to privacy, and that women have the right to make their own decisions about their health care. Because to me, that's just common sense.
Donald Trump and Elon Musk are both backing Brad Schimmel. He'll do whatever they want. That's why we need Judge Susan Crawford. The common sense judge will keep them in check. Judge Susan Crawford for Supreme Court. Paid for by Susan Crawford for Wisconsin. Crawford for WI.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Thank God for you.
I thank God.
You're a woman enough. Girl, not to try to hide.
Didn't try to hide it, baby.
You didn't try to hide your love. Oh, the son of a
gun.
No need to explain. Thank the angels for you. That you are warm enough. Try to make it easy.
I want you to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is Dr. Anthony Eastreet. He is the CEO of social workers in this country. Dr. Eastreet, we've got a caller. Let's bring her on, Liz from Saukville. Good morning to you. You have a question or comment for the doctor, Liz?
I just thank you, Earl. I love your show. And thank you, Dr. Eastreet, for all that you do. It's what you do runs the spectrum of all ages, because I have to speak with social workers because my mom has had two strokes and she has to go to the hospital, So I speak with social workers a lot, and they are so kind. They arrange my mom's transportation, and they give me updates. They arrange transportation back to her assisted living center where she lives. And so I appreciate you and all that you do immensely.
Hey, Liz, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Eastreet?
Liz, thank you so much. First of all, I do hope that your mom is doing well and that she continues to do well. I am so glad to hear that your experience with social workers have been positive. I think to your point, it really does talk about, where social workers are. We are also in, healthcare settings and assisted living facilities. And I'm glad that, we're able to help you and your mom to access the resources that you need so that she can be the best version of herself going forward.
You know, Dr. Eastreet, there was a time, again, when I was a young man, social workers were women. Has that changed much?
You know, it's interesting. Social work has traditionally been characterized as a profession that, you know, is predominantly going, and people that go into it are women. I think the reality of the situation is we're seeing more and more men go into the profession, and in fact, there's quite a bit of men that are in the social work profession. I think that there is a unique diversity that within our entire profession that looks at men, women, trans women, black, white, Asian, you name it. We cover the spectrum on diversity, and I think that is one of the beauties of our profession is that.
Dr. Street. Hey. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. How are you able to continue to support diversity, equity, and inclusion when that's become just a no-no in this administration?
Because the reality of the situation is, Earl, and I say this with my entire being. People have mischaracterized diversity, equity, and inclusion in such a way that they only look at it in terms of race. When I talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it is the full spectrum of how people show up in this world, whether it is race, ethnicity, gender orientation, gender.
Disability,
like all the different things. And so when people say, oh, let's get rid of DE&I, I'm not really sure what they're talking about, because the diversity, equity, inclusion makes sure that people can access buildings. When you have to utilize a ramp because you're in a wheelchair and utilize a button to get into a building to open a door, like that is diversity, equity, inclusion. It's literally the definition of making sure that people feel included and like they belong in the community and the society that we have built today. That's it.
So you refuse to allow the pressure of this administration to force, you know, what you guys and what you do and believe in to change that mission?
You know, I think diversity, equity, and inclusion have always been in the core fabric of social work as a profession. As we advocated for social justice, you know, social workers have been on the front lines of every major civil rights movement, social justice movement. And so when you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion as a new topic that has people have been talking about post George Floyd, it has been in the fabric of social work the entire time. And so for us, diversity, equity, and inclusion is really answering the question is, how do we help people feel like they can have access, that they are included, and that they belong, right? And those are three fundamental questions to really that help guide our work, right? If you show up in a social worker's office, they're really going to make sure, like, how can you live the best version of yourself? And that's whether you are a trans person, a black person, a white person, or you identify as something else. We're going to make sure that you can feel included, that you have access to things, but also that you feel like you belong, right? And that includes fighting for policies that help to increase that. And so when we look at, you know, federal policies, when we look at state policies, we're always going to advocate on behalf of increasing diversity, equity, and inclusion in all sectors of life.
You know, Dr. Street, it has been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to have this dialogue with you this morning, and really the strawberry on, you know, the ice cream is where you just laid it out on diversity, equity, and inclusion, man. That, you know, that is a must, I think, when you're talking about social work. It's a must when you're talking about life, right? And I don't care where it is.
Yeah.
That's who we are, right? As Americans, that's who we are as people. We aren't one people, you know, one group of people. I mean, we're one group of people. That's who we are.
No, absolutely. And I think to your point, the more, you know, as people are talking about how divided we are, it's diversity, equity, inclusion that brings us together. The ability to have different thoughts, the ability to be able to talk about that, right? And it spreads across a lot of different topics. I think what has happened is we've allowed too many people to relegate diversity, equity, inclusion into just race.
So, Dr. Eastreet, we have to leave it at that. We'll reach back out to you. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
All right, thank you so much.
All right. You're listening to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. AAA is issuing a reminder about the dangers the time change can have on drivers. Nick Jarmalis is the Director of Public Affairs for AAA, the Auto Club Group. He says, quote, "The time change impacts daylight hours and sleep patterns, raising the risk of drowsy driving, which can contribute to a dangerous crash. Common symptoms of drowsy driving include trouble keeping eyes open, trouble keeping your head up, drifting from your lane, cannot recall last few miles driven, feeling restless or irritable, and daydreaming or wandering thoughts." A 20-year study published in Current Biology analyzed over 732,000 car crashes, finding a 6% increase in fatal crashes during the week following the switch to daylight saving time. To protect yourself and others, AAA recommends drivers commit to the following safe driving practices. Stay alert and rested. Fatalities due to drowsiness are 10 times higher than reported. Drowsy driving is as dangerous as driving under the influence. Avoid distractions. Drivers should not use a cell phone while behind the wheel. Stow your smartphone away, turn it to airplane mode, or activate call text blocking features like Do Not Disturb. Obey speed limits. Speeding significantly increases the severity of a crash. Drive sober. 95% of drivers overwhelmingly perceive drunk driving as dangerous and socially unacceptable, yet 7% admitted engaging in this behavior in the previous 30 days. If you are taking potentially impairing prescription medications, discuss with your doctor or pharmacist how to best stay safe and healthy behind the wheel. Buckle up for every ride. A properly worn seatbelt is the most effective way to survive a traffic crash.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There might be a little trouble on Planet Netflix. Despite record gains last year, the streaming platform that seems to keep adding viewers and raising prices all at the same time saw its stock go down 8.5%, according to Variety, due to what most analysts are calling slower subscriber growth and a broader market reaction to President Trump's indecision on tariffs on Canada and Mexico. I know acting pretty much sounds like a cushy gig to most people outside the biz, but during an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel Live last week, actor Walton Goggins told the story of how he was bitten by a snake while filming episode 3 of season 3 of The White Lotus. The irony was that the snake was supposed to bite his co-star, Amy Lou Wood, who plays his girlfriend on the show. Macho Man Goggins owned up, though, and says he didn't exactly play it cool. Instead, he yelled, "Oh my God, I got bit by a snake," repeatedly in front of everyone. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Sunny, warm, and breezy today. We'll get to the upper 60s, even lower 70s. And be careful with fire. There will be elevated grassland fire danger today. Tonight, breezy into the 20s. Tomorrow, sunny, cooler, low to mid 40s. We'll be back in the 60s, even close to 70 later this week. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 34.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is shallow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trump and Vance verbally assaulted the president of Ukraine, an ally of the U.S. Trump defending the president of Russia, a known dictator. This is a complete capitulation to our sworn enemies. And it's time for Republicans, my former party that I left in 2011, to speak the hell up. Because if we don't, it's not going to be long before we don't have anything left to defend.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Salvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kaye, will discuss the American crisis. Also, if the GOP has a mandate, should they be able to pass a stopgap spending bill without Democratic help? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
All right, welcome back to Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. I wish you could hear, you know, this song kick into the next phase. Let's play for a couple seconds. All right, yes, Slipping Into Darkness. Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-967-2789. Cardi, I don't think you ever heard that, right?
Nah.
Man, you need to hear it all the way through. It's bad. But anyway, you know, we've been talking about Elon Musk and Donald Trump and all of those MAGAs who support Elon Musk cutting the government. And, you know, we're always talking about the waste in the government and, you know, people who are getting contracts who don't deserve them. And I forgot who it called earlier, and he mentioned something about Elon Musk getting contracts. Well, Elon Musk double standard. SpaceX wins government contract while public services face deep cuts. A $38.85 million contract awarded to Elon Musk SpaceX sparks outrage as his government office slashes funding for healthcare. Now, we know Elon Musk just had, you know, one of his rockets, you know, explode again. And yet he's got a government contract. And yet he's cutting all of these other educational and social programs. I don't know why people don't see a problem with that, right? He's benefiting from government programs while he's cutting all of these other programs. But anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. But here's something that really upsets me to no end. And we supposedly have freedom of speech in this nation. And it's being eroded right before our eyes. And this double standard of what speech is accepted and what speech is not accepted, the fact that we as Americans see this happening and we aren't outraged enough to call, you know, this administration out on it. Immigration agents arrest Palestinian activists who helped lead Columbia University protests. Now, when the height of the war in Gaza with Israel and, you know, I don't know, I'm having trouble thinking, Hamas was taking place. And there were college students all over this nation voicing their displeasure with the universities who supported Israel during that war that is still going on for the most part, except for this short hiatus. And yet, these students were called all sorts of horrible names and traitors and how dare they. And again, it helps to have been around for a while. Because I remember many college students during the Vietnam War. If you've been around a while, you remember on almost every college campus, That's what kind of helped bring the war to an end. The outrage of young people in the street and on universities, in universities, constantly saying, no, this is not right. University students are free. They've always been free to say what they feel. Throughout my entire life, that's the way it's been. And because they are free, they have been able to bring changes that many of us, you know, who have lived some time and, you know, kind of protective of our jobs and other things, that we can't speak out freely. And so the way this has been structured in this country for eons was that students were free, and they were free to speak their minds, and there would not be repercussions. Well, so why has that changed? I mean, all the different things that have changed and continue to change in this nation, I don't know it anymore. You know, and especially, you know, over the last 7-8 weeks. But I'll tell you, I was even opposed to it when Joe Biden was the president. I remember going down to UWM, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and they had the tent cities there. And there was all this conversation about those students who were ill-informed, and they have no right to be supporting the Palestinians. And so they should totally support Israel. And I'm like, hey, man, that doesn't make sense to me to condemn students for their beliefs when that wasn't the way it was when we were young. It might have been. Some people may have spoken out about it, but not to the degree that is happening right now. To condemn students for their constitutional rights? I mean, I thought that's what people fought, bled, and died for in this country. Now, that's what I was taught. People, you know, have a right to their views. Well, guess what? So why are immigration agents arresting Palestinian activists, you know, who led protests, peaceful protests, on these various campuses? So I invited some of the young protesters from UWM to my show. And people said to me, man, you had better watch it, man. You're taking a chance. I'm like, hey, man, if it's considered taking a chance to expect your nation to live up to its creed, and people are afraid and they call that taking a chance, no, maybe there need to be more Earl Ingrams. I'm sorry. We have to be willing to challenge our nation to be right, to do what's right. This is not acceptable to say to people and young people who are doing all that they can to build a future for themselves and trying to hold our nation accountable for what it says it is. Federal immigration authorities arrested a Palestinian activist Saturday who played a prominent role in Columbia University's protests against Israel, a significant escalation in the Trump administration's pledge to detain and deport student activists. What? Detain and deport student activists? Hey, man, that's what happens on university campuses. And so now we're going to do away with that? Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. How you doing, sir?
I really like the topic you're talking on. We all remember Tiananmen Square.
Oh, absolutely.
And isn't that what's going on right here in the U.S.?
Well, you know, Bill, not all of us remember Tiananmen Square. But for those of us who do, university students who were outraged in the behavior of their country and tanks running over, you know, students unarmed and before the whole world. And we condemned that, Bill. You remember how we condemned that? How was this so different?
It's not different at all. The bottom line is we're going through COVID in a different way. Not COVID the virus, COVID the handling of how he handled COVID. Remember, it's going to be over by spring. Now, it's not going to be over by spring. Millions died when spring came, or a million died. We have to show the world and our country we're built on democracy, not communism.
So let me ask you, say we have to show, you know, we were supposedly that before Donald Trump. So if we were that before Donald Trump, then how does this one man come and dismantle that? Can you tell me?
Well, here's what that one man is going to accomplish. You watch the backlash. You watch an asking for all the funding of Israel. You watch how people are going to this man has started a movement. Now, you saw what happened, I don't know if it was this weekend or last weekend in Washington with the support of Ukraine, right out in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. Look at the backlash. Our great congressmen can't have town halls, and our senators can't have town halls. And our elected far-right officials can't have town halls. Now, there's plenty of Republicans left that can have town halls, and they won't get shouted out because they see the need to uphold the oath of office. The others, they don't care about the oath of office. They could care less. They just care on making the right guy smile. Well, I'm sick and tired of it. We're all sick and tired of it. We are a nation of people living under a constitution and justice. Suddenly, justice and the constitution is not important.
Hey, Bill, let me ask you this. So, you know, 48% of Americans didn't vote or whatever the number was. Do you think that, and we've got to figure out a way to organize those people and hear their voices? Because if you get 10% of those 48% of the people who didn't vote, now you can bring some real pressure on the MAGAs and the Republicans, even if you got 5% of them. Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Folks, I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic cuts to the NIH.
The National Institutes of Health, the state receives almost $600 million. That pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in 1 year.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the global cleft community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. Yes. Shortly, we'll be taking it to the streets. We'll be gathering at Memorial Square on 6th and Main here in Racine. An organized group, You Don't Know Me, But I'm Your Brother. And they're going to be organized. And they are going to be, and they are there, and this is the second week in a row, and they're going to continue to do this. They have had enough. That's what it's going to take all across this nation. Groups of citizens and people who have had enough, enough talk, enough feeling victimized. Because as Tom from L.A. always says, we the people are the government. And it is going to take that all over this nation, in townships, in cities, all over this nation. I don't care if it takes, you know, during the civil rights struggle in Birmingham, Alabama, 320 days, blacks refused to get on the buses because of injustice. They weren't allowed to sit wherever they wanted to sit. And so nobody would help them. Nobody could feel their pain or understand their cause. And Dr. King, one of the greatest efforts ever witnessed, That's 368 days or somewhere around there. It was over a year. Blacks walked, refused to get on the buses. And guess what? That policy was changed. It wasn't changed because of government. Government didn't change it. The politricksters didn't change it. It was the people. It was the people who had had enough. And they organized. And it began. 1 second, then to minutes, then to hours, then to days, then to weeks, then to months, and over a year. And said, we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to tolerate it. Well, that's what's taking place this afternoon here in Racine, Wisconsin. Once again, 12 o'clock, Memorial Square, 6th and Main. As people have had enough, they're not asking anymore. Not asking all the people. Not asking the county supervisors. They're not asking the mayor. They're not asking the governor. They're not asking the president, the Congress people. They're not asking the president of the United States. They know that this is a battle that has to be won by the average rank and file American. So I'm thrilled that they feel that I have something to say. I do. And I'm going to say it. And I'm going to make it clear how proud I am of those citizens of the city of Racine. And that maybe they can be the impetus to move this thing forward. Hey, Eric from Tulsa, what's happening, man?
Hey, Earl, happy Motown Monday as always. I just got one question. I know you're running low on time, so I just got one question to ask all your listeners and to pose to everybody is, if you think about it, and you know, because a lot of people complain about the Democrats, what they're not doing, they're hiding, et cetera, et cetera. And I've seen Representative Glenn Moore out there quite a bit. She was at the VA rally, and she's out there talking and warning people. But at what point in our history have politicians ever led a human rights movement?
Hey, Eric, I wish I had more time, man. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much,
everybody who made the show go. Up next, Jane Madnair, Greg Bach, Madnair on air. I'll let you know how great it was on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Taking it to the street.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Maggie Dawn.
Hey, everybody. I've got an off day coming up, but don't worry. We've got you covered. We'll be chatting with Mark Pocan at 3 o'clock about the Elon Act. Do we really want billionaire overlords controlling our government?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend. And then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Just in, a source close to Ukrainian President Zelensky says that Ukraine will propose a partial ceasefire in talks with the U.S. tomorrow in Saudi Arabia. Off the coast of East England, at least 32 people were brought ashore, all of them on board either an oil tanker or a cargo ship that ran into each other. ABC's Marcus Moore at the Foreign Desk.
The U.S.-flagged oil tanker and a Portuguese container ship collided. And we've seen some images that show what appears to be two vessels on fire and thick black smoke billowing into the air.
The market still volatile today as traders weigh the effect of Trump tariffs will have. The Dow is down 358 points this hour. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case from Colorado on whether state governments can enforce laws banning conversion therapy for LGBTQ children. Colorado, one of roughly half the states that ban the practice of trying to change a person's sexual orientation through counseling. This is ABC News.